believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Talking about child preachers today on Issues Etc. Listening to the last part of an ABC News story on two child preachers. One 7, I think the other one is 9 years old. Both of them claim to have been preaching for years. In fact, it's kind of cute. One of the kids in the middle of a sermon, I think they might get to this in a minute, says, I remember when I was young. He's 7 years old. He says, I remember when I was young. And that's, of course, always a relative term. The question I'm putting to you is, do you think that children can be preachers? Do you think there, can you make a theological case? Obviously, a sociological case can be made against taking your kid all over the country and putting him in front of crowds to preach and in a sense to imitate adult preachers. And you wonder what's going to happen with the kids when they get older. Do these kids have childhoods? But what about a theological case? For or against? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, and we are coming to you live this Wednesday, October the 17th. A little bit later, Good Morning America has a debate on offering birth control pills to middle school-aged girls in Maine, and a Fox News report on the top Christians in Hollywood. I could only think of one before the break. I took a look at the list, and it makes more sense to me now, top Christians in Hollywood. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's the rest of that ABC News story on child preachers.
What's the harm in letting a 7-year-old preach?
I find it abusive. And I also find it offensive to the faith. The Christian faith is for me and for millions of other people a source of meaning, a source of truth, and to have it reduced to a kind of circus sideshow, I find deeply offensive.
Don't do this! Don't kill your child!
Samuel often preaches outside abortion clinics.
Do you know what an abortion is? You do?
I've seen it before, and I've seen it on paper. I've seen what it looks like.
What is it?
It's where women go in and kill their child. I'll tell you the same thing I told my daddy one time. If they don't want to have their child, why don't they give it to somebody else?
Do you know how babies are made?
Uh-uh.
Don't kill your child!
What was your reaction to seeing that video?
Don't kill your child!
It seems to me that the child is being used as a kind of political prop for a particular political ideology that he doesn't fully understand. It's fairly clear.
But Samuel's father argues that the boy is simply preaching the law of the Bible. Samuel says he's always learning and expects to be preaching his entire life.
Like I told you when I was little, I always done it. I didn't know about brotherly love yet. But now that I'm taught, God taught me to show brotherly love. God, He's one.
The boy is clearly articulate and mature beyond his years, which is why it's almost surprising when in a candid moment the child comes out.
Samuel, what do you think makes you want to preach?
You're going to have to ask my daddy that. I don't know.
All right, there's a story from ABC News on child preachers. It's endearing. It's a little weird to see this kid standing up there with his Bible with a church full of people in front of him. And he's preaching the word. He's saying, when I was little, I used to think this. And it's almost kind of like when I was a child, I spoke like a child and thought like a child, but he's still a child. That's kind of the irony in the whole scene. It's hard to find many subjects that Episcopal priests will say, that shouldn't be. That's wrong. Don't do that. I mean, they'll let you do just about anything in this world, most Episcopal priests. But they found one, an Episcopal priest and a professor of religion, who said, look, he draws the line at child preachers. So what do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Ellen is listening in Chesterfield. Hi, Ellen.
Oh, hi, Pastor Wilkin. You know, these kids, it's pitiful the way they're being taken advantage of. They're probably brilliant brilliant, highly gifted children, and where they belong is in a good school system with a good program for gifted children. These could be the extremely productive people, you know, future rocket scientists. They couldn't pull this whole thing off unless if they were just really very, very brilliant children. And the parents are almost like the old, we used to talk about stage mothers and that. That's all that this is. And they're just being steered in the totally wrong direction. And it's really pretty. They're brainwashed besides, but these kids could have such a potential and if they were steered right. And it's just a thought that I had, and it really, and they should not have the responsibility of preaching either. That's
now, see, you put your finger on something there, Ellen. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You know, preaching isn't, it is a privilege. It certainly is. But preaching is also a burden. When St. Paul says, if a man desires to be a pastor, he desires a noble task. But he also says, lay hands on no one hastily. No one hastily. He encourages that the pastors that young Timothy appoints would not be new converts. There's a danger there, he says. And he seems to presuppose that we're dealing here with adult preachers rather than child preachers. Would you want a child doctor? You remember, that's the bump music we should have got, Jeff. Doogie Howser, the theme to Doogie Howser, M.D. I mean, this guy now has gone on to a pretty stellar career in another sitcom, but you remember Doogie Howser?
I do remember Doogie Howser, and he looks about the same on this new sitcom, which is, he plays like a pervert on that show. I saw the
he's hilarious.
Like a promo for it. He's like a perv, isn't he?
He kind of plays your swarmy, well-dressed ladies' man kind of a guy.
Which you and I never fit the bill for that.
Look at us. I mean, look at us, for heaven's sake.
We're losers, aren't we?
Yeah. Proudly bear that title as long as I live. Now, I remember the little sitcom drama, whatever it was, Doogie Howser, M.D. You remember this? Young child of like 3 years old ends up graduating high school, and then he goes to college, he goes to medical school, and somehow, by the time he's, 12 or 13, he's a full-blown doctor in a hospital saving lives. And the whole storyline would always revolve around the fact that nobody respects this young kid who doesn't seem to know what he's doing, but he'll always come up with the solution to save someone's life, and he's able to exercise, do surgery, all these kind of things. A skilled doctor at 12 or 13 years old. It was good entertainment, or I guess it was passable entertainment, but if you walked into the hospital and you were going to have, say, open heart surgery, kidney transplant, some real serious kind of surgery, life-saving kind of surgery, and they said, oh, by the way, your doctor is 7 years old. Any of you have raised children? You know the attention span of a seven-year-old? Your doctor is 7 years old. Now, he's a perfectly skilled surgeon. He's done this operation before. If you have your choice between the 7-year-old doctor and you have your choice between the 60-year-old doctor, which one do you choose? You say, no, that's not the same. Doctors save lives. Doctors have life and death in their hands. Doctors is a serious profession, don't you know? Well, I think Matt from Florida said, as long as we view the office of the ministry, he said, as any other kind of vocation, we're going to continue to have these problems with the pastoral office. You know, I think he might have been overestimating the way people view the pastoral office. They view the pastoral office as something, you know, anyone can do this. And in a sense, that's kind of true. Anyone could do it, but God doesn't call just anyone to do it. He calls those whom he deems qualified for whatever reason. I've never been able to figure out why he deemed me qualified to be a pastor, and I never will figure it out. He'll explain it to me someday. But if it's just, you know, I feel like being a pastor today, which is a way a lot of Christians operate. I feel like being a pastor today. I think I'm going to start me a church. If adults can do that, why can't the kids? I'm feeling pastorish today. I think I'll become a pastor. Bing! I'm a pastor. How did that happen? I just became one. I made myself one. I'm self-appointed. There are no serious professions, vocations, or callings in this world to which we allow people to appoint themselves. We don't allow Supreme Court justices to appoint themselves, do we? No. Do we allow our presidents to appoint themselves, our doctors, our mechanics, our plumbers to appoint themselves? No. For some reason, and especially Christians, have such a low view of Christ's office, that is the pastoral office, they say, come on, if they want to appoint themselves, let them have at it. What's it going to hurt? Joe's calling from his car. Hi, Joe.
Hi. When you were talking about responsibility, it occurred to me where the Bible says that they're going to be called to a higher account also. And just as far as the parents of those kids, if they took that serious, you know, and willing to put their kids in that position to where, you know, it's pretty clear that if you're going to be a teacher, you're going to be accountable for what you're teaching. And I was just thinking of the lady previous to that comment, how she was talking about how those kids could do so much, and I really appreciate that because I could get my 8-year-old to go out and do that, like they know the Bible, but the education that God's provided to understand, you know, the language and everything else and to accurately handle the word is all there. So if you want your kid to be a preacher, then it would seem like the responsible thing would be provide them the education they need to become that.
Good thoughts, Joe. Thank you very much. Well, again, I mentioned before Jesus, 12 years old, there he is in the temple, astounding. Jesus is never a good example to use when we're asking these things, but I'm going to use them anyway. Because one of the little preacher kids said, hey, Jesus was in the temple at 12 years old. He's there astounding the teachers of the law with his knowledge. One might even say he's instructing them and answering their questions. Although I think they're probably grilling him. They're not saying, hey, could you explain something to me? And he's explaining it to them. They're probably grilling him, and they're amazed at his answers. And then his parents show up and say, where were you? And he says, I'm going to be in my father's house. Didn't you know that? This is where I belong, in my father's house, doing my father's business. And then it says, and then he went with them. He submitted to their authority, and he went. And he didn't spend his childhood in the temple astounding the teachers, or he didn't start the Jesus Incorporated Seminary there in Jerusalem to train other child preachers. He didn't launch into his public ministry at 12. He didn't. He astounded the teachers, yes, with his knowledge, as he had the opportunity. And then he went home, and it says he grew in both in stature before both God and men, and which is the Bible's way of saying, and he basically went back to being an ordinary kid in his family, the way ordinary kids do, until he grew up. And then he made his public appearance. When? When he was a full-grown man. By that culture's standards, he was a full-grown man at 30. I mean, some might argue that means someone shouldn't be a pastor until they're 30. There may be some merit in that argument. Who knows? You know, you couldn't be a rabbi, a teacher of the law, in Jewish culture until you were 30. You weren't even allowed to read some books of the Bible, the Old Testament, until you were 30. You were considered to lack the judgment to properly handle the Word of God. When St. Paul looks at the pastors that he has appointed and left behind him in all these churches, he presumes that he's dealing with adult men whom God has called. Now, the call may come much earlier, but it's never certain, completely certain, until God confirms that call through his church. And he wants people who carefully handle the word of truth, who responsibly handle the word of truth, who have a certain level of maturity as grown men, who can do things like handle their own house because that speaks to a certain degree about how they're going to handle the household of God, who are apt to teach, husbands of one wife, of good repute. All these things speak of adults and not children. But see, the real problem here is that we want to make the church, and we want to make pastors into what we think they are. The church that has decided that the church is something they invented, Christians decided that the church is something they invented and that pastors are something they came up with, there are no limits as to who could be pastors or what could be pastors. But the church isn't our invention or our institution. It's Christ's. So we let Christ tell us how to fill that office that he has left with us, his own office. At Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, and here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, you will not find seven-year-olds walking around training for the pastoral ministry because they take seriously the task, the burden, and the responsibility that is laid before men who are called by Christ to fill his office, to preach his word, and administer his sacraments faithfully in the church. Christ-centered, cross-focused pastors for the 21st century. That's what they're producing at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis and Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. If you've ever considered studying for the pastoral ministry, now if you're 7 or 8 years old, you might have to wait a few years. They'll still welcome you there. You might have to wait a few years. But if you've considered studying for the pastoral ministry, check them out. Our website, issuesetc.org, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Concordia Seminary in St. Louis.
All right, then, come on, Spin.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and Wendy. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
It's Audio Open Lines. We're going to move on to a Good Morning America debate on offering birth control pills to middle-aged, I say schoolgirls, because that's what they are, in Maine. Now, you probably heard about this law and this story and the debate that's going on in Maine. We have a debate for you between kind of the pro and the con, the caution, and let's throw caution to the wind. The argument, hey, they're going to have sex anyway, so we might as well give them the birth control pill to keep everything very, very safe for these kids. I want to hear your reaction to it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Just a warning in advance. The language here does, it's not graphic, but it does, it may cross the boundary if you got kids, young kids in the car or at home listening, so just beware of that. It comes from Good Morning America. Let's listen.
Contraception and middle schools. Did you know that 2% of middle schools and junior high schools are already making condoms available? But now one school tonight, educators are going to consider whether they're going to add the pill and the patch to that as well, and we're talking about for children as young as 11 to 13 years old. By and large, these will be distributed in health clinics, which are generally in neighborhoods which need help with health care. They are caught in the changing worlds of early puberty and sexual messages everywhere. At a middle school in Portland, Maine, today, some students say they are sexually active.
We do certainly sit down and speak with them about why that's not a good choice, but there are some who persist, even though we don't like to think about that, in being sexually active. They need to be protected.
Just how much protection will be debated tonight when the Portland School Committee meets to decide if their middle school will offer a broader range, including prescriptions for birth control pills and the patch, not for everyone, but the few who are sexually active.
It will provide a means of making sure that you don't get pregnant and ruin your school career and limit yourself in your future.
The Middle School Health Center already provides condoms as part of its reproductive health program. And they say of the 135 children who visited the center last year, 5 reported being sexually active. By the way, while students need a parent's written permission to take advantage of the health services, no one has to tell parents if birth control is in fact being given.
I think that education about birth control at that age is appropriate because our culture is saturated with messages about sex.
I don't think I would want my child in middle school to be getting birth control pills unless I had something to do with it.
I think providing birth control pills may encourage some kids to have sex if they think that it's safe, but what's the alternative? Unsafe sex? Pregnant 12-year-olds?
So I think we've got a preview of a debate that is going to go on tonight. Joining us now is Glenn Beck. As you know, he is the Glenn Beck Show, the same name, Glenn Beck Show, and also sexual educator Logan Lefkoff. And we thank you for joining us.
Thank
you. And we want to tackle this. But Glenn, let me start with you. You may not like it.
Yeah.
You may want parents to go in and take care of their own children and make sure that they're not sexually active that young. But it's happening.
It's happening.
Yeah, well, that's why they're giving away condoms. We're taking a next jump here, which is the disturbing part for me. You're already getting condoms. How easy are we going to make it? Now you get birth control as well.
Yes, but if it protects these young girls, if it's more protection for these young girls.
Why does the state of Maine have a law on the books now saying it's illegal to have sex under 14? They're sending mixed messages. In the state of Maine, you cannot have sex under 14.
But that's a legislative issue.
I understand that, but they're saying because it is not, they are not emotionally capable of making the decision of having sex. You're talking about an 11-year-old, and you're cutting the family out of the process.
All right, Logan, 11-year-old, yes. And it can be done privately, as we heard.
It could be, and parents should be the sex educators of their children. They can be the best ones. The problem is that not every parent feels empowered to do this. Not every parent feels that he or she has the skills. And if you've already expressed your issues and your values about sexuality to your kids, then if contraception is being offered in these school-based health programs, then your kids understand what your values are. And if your parents aren't talking to the kids, then you better be thanking your lucky stars that someone is taking care of their sexual health.
Well, please don't take away the power from the parent. I understand if the school wants to talk about sex, great. The school can talk about sex, but the parents, if these kids go in for this help, the school is not allowed to talk to the parents. We're talking about
consent law.
No. For the health care, they can get the condoms.
Let me see if we agree here on one thing, though.
Yeah.
If the parents were notified that indeed the pill, the patch, was going to be administered, you'd be okay then.
No, here's I don't demonize the kids. Okay, what I do is if the parent said, you know what, go ahead and give them the pill. They're an 11-year-old. Would you say it would be okay as a parent if I said, you know what, my kid's going to get drunk. Hang on. My kid's going to get drunk tonight. Please dispense some aspirin and some Tums tomorrow morning.
That's Glenn Beck in part of this debate as they're talking about the Maine school possibly making the decision to provide the birth control pill to middle school age kids. And we're talking about 11, 12, 13 years old from school without the parents' consent. Now, Glenn has laid out an argument we've often made here on Issues, etc. The old, well, they're going to do it anyway. If they're going to do it anyway, perhaps we should make it as safe as possible for them to do it. For some reason in society, we haven't yet come to the point where we say, well, they're going to carry handguns into school anyway. We might as well give them why don't we put gun lockers in the school that they can access? Since they're going to carry the handgun into school anyway, why don't we make it safe? The safest handguns possible. Let's give everybody Kevlar vests. Because they're going to carry handguns into school anyway. Let's provide Kevlar vests. Or, how about this one? They're going to get drunk anyway. Let's give them a safe place to drink. More on this debate after this. It's Audio Open Lines, Issues, etc. Stay tuned. I'm bringing sexy back. Yeah. The mother boys don't know how to act. Yeah. I think it's special what's behind your back. Yeah. So turn around and I'll pick up the slack.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mark, host of Life Revised. Toxic relationships can be physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually damaging. Please join my co-host, Michelle Bauer, and me and discover how you can reverse the damage and have a new outlook on life. We'll help you define a toxic relationship so you can recognize and deal appropriately with them in your life. Join us on Life Revised because life is a series of revisions.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Are you tired of the constant battle to protect your child from the media garbage that comes into your home? On the next Focus on the Family broadcast, Dr. James Dobson visits with conservative talk radio host and best-selling author Laura Ingraham about her new book, Power to the People. It's what you need to know to protect your family. On the next Focus on the Family with Dr. James Dobson.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Questions, they're the same the world over.
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the eye-opening book, The Great Dinosaur Mystery Solved. Ken, I'm assuming that you're saying people ask the same questions about the Bible no matter what country they're in, right?
Well, that's correct. Over the past 25 years, I've spoken in Japan, Hong Kong, Germany, Belgium, France, Luxembourg, as well as Australia, New Zealand, Canada, all over America, in Mexico recently, and in other nations. And the interesting thing to me is that everywhere I speak, no matter what the language, people ask the same basic questions, such as, well, where did Cain get his wife? How did Noah fit the animals like dinosaurs on the ark? Have scientists proved the earth is billions of years old? How do dinosaurs fit with the Bible? And so on. You know what this shows me is that the same arguments have been used against the Bible all around the world. The secular scientists have indoctrinated people to believe that Christians can't answer such questions, and therefore we see the Bible can't be true. But you know, these questions can be answered. And I've found that as I've been able to give answers, many people have been challenged to believe the Bible, and many have committed their lives to the Lord. You see, Cain married his sister. Most dinosaurs were small anyway, and most dating methods contradict the supposed billions of years. Make sure you get the answers.
Ken Ham has written quite a bit about Cain's wife, dinosaurs, and the Earth's real age. For example, find his free witnessing booklets on those topics when you go to our website, answersradio.com.
I'm not talking to those folks now who never give any money to church. I'm talking to those of you who do, who make an offering, maybe even a weekly offering at your church. Do you make that offering willingly? No, do you really make it willingly? Let's talk about that with Pastor Stephen Tice next time on our 10:05 Bible Study.
The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
There's a reason why the address for AM 850 KFUO is Founders Lane. It's because we're always mindful of the original vision that our founders shared when they purposed to use the medium of radio to broadcast the gospel. That vision has not changed. What has changed is the number of competing and conflicted voices that confuse or compromise the gospel message. Our task is to proclaim the gospel as clearly as possible, free from historic or contemporary error. Our listeners and supporters tell us that they are grateful for the faithfulness of the message they hear on KFUO, and some have come forward to join our Founders Club so that we can continue our broadcast ministry. I encourage you to join those who are already members of the Founders Club. Your investment in the KFUO radio ministry comes to about $70 a month, and the KFUO staff shows its appreciation for members of the Founders Club by hosting the annual Founders Club dinner. This is Chuck Rather, and I'm hoping that you will join our Founders Club. Call me at 314-505-7831, and I'll arrange the details.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, talking about this school in Maine that's contemplating the possibility of giving birth control pills to middle school aged girls, 11, 12, 13 years old. If you showed up at the school board meeting in Portland, Maine tonight, what would you say about offering these middle school girls the birth control pill without their parents' permission, by the way? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or issuesetc at kfuo.org. An argument we've made often, and we're hearing it in this debate, is because, well, it's really not an argument, it's a response. The mindset seems to be in sex education, the distribution of condoms and birth control to our kids, is they're going to do it anyway. So let's provide them with the safest possible way of doing it. Oddly, a logic that we do not employ in practically any other area of their lives. They're going to drive drunk anyway. Let's find the safest possible way for them to drive drunk. They're going to take illegal drugs anyway. Let's find the safest possible way for them to take drugs. They're going to smoke cigarettes anyway. And these kids smoke cigarettes like chimneys. Why isn't the school handing out you know those little filter tip things that they used to put that they put on cigarettes, the long thing that the Hollywood starlets used to use for their cigarettes? Why not hand out cigarette filters? They're going to smoke anyway, aren't they? For some reason, when it comes to they're going to have sex anyway, the logic completely turns itself on its head and says, well, you know, although it seems foolish to give children the healthiest cigarettes possible because they're going to smoke anywhere, although it seems foolish to provide kids with Kevlar vests in school because they're going to bring their handguns anyway, when they're going to have sex anyway, we're all for giving them every means of doing it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues, ETC at KFUO.org. Issues, etc. is underwritten in part by LCMS World Relief. Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief are taking the lead in bringing Reformation theology back to the land of the Reformation. It's called the Wittenberg Center, right there in the home city of the Lutheran Reformation, not really only a stone's throw from where Luther posted the 95 Theses so many years ago. To find out more about the Wittenberg Center and this effort on the part of Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief to bring Reformation theology back to the land of the Reformation, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or give them a call, 1-888-930-4438, Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. Let's hear more from this debate on Good Morning America about the main school that's thinking about the birth control pills for 11, 12, and 13-year-old girls.
They're an 11-year-old. Would you say it would be okay as a parent if I said, you know what, my kid's going to get drunk. Hang on. My kid's going to get drunk tonight. Please dispense some aspirin and some Tums tomorrow morning. You would take that child out of the house because it's not right to allow the kid to get drunk.
Sexuality is part of who we are, and our sexual health is part of our overall health. So it is not a surprise that if we're dealing with head-to-toe health issues, sexual health is one of them, and we can't forget
that. We're talking about parents.
We are talking
who are
about
making
parents,
the decision that it would be okay for their kid to have sex. As an alcoholic, I'm a recovering alcoholic, I know a little thing about enabling people. You are enabling people.
Glenn, there has never been any research to suggest that by providing contraception, you're encouraging
not
people to go out.
Not talking about contraception. I'm okay. Go ahead with the condoms. I'm talking about now writing
know,
a prescription for
forget,
the pill.
But don't forget that the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists just said that they want teens girls to start seeing a gynecologist in their early
teens.
See the
gynecologist with mom or dad.
Can I just, I'm curious about your differentiation between condom pill.
Oh, I'm
and
not, look,
pill.
Because I'm a realist on, I understand that there are bad parents out there, I understand that there is disease out there, but we're talking now about taking the pill. Now we're saying, hey, you go ahead, look, I mean, how easy are
well,
we going to make it?
You're not
why don't
making
we just,
it easy.
Why don't we just,
well,
the library is outdated, why don't we have a copulation room for the kids?
You're still teaching them about responsibility.
No, I mean, how easy
but
are we going to make
need
it?
They need a physical exam still, which most people don't get before they just pick up their condoms and become sexually active. You're talking to counselors. There is background information there. It's not just, here, take them and go.
Would you draw the line anywhere? What if it were grade school debating this?
Here's the issue.
Because we know that puberty is younger and younger and younger.
It's absolutely.
Where do you
earlier.
Draw the line?
I think I don't necessarily draw the line because we are in a world where we get so many sexual messages, and where is our goal? Our priority should be to protect our youth and make sure that if they are going to make decisions that they are as sexually active as possible, and we give parents the tools to teach at home so we don't have to defer to a lot of other sources.
All right, well, this is the debate that's going to go on tonight, as I say.
Raise the bar, don't lower it. Raise the bar.
Take care of our youth.
All right.
I love Glenn Beck. I may not have told you guys this, and I don't want to push anybody else's show. I really shouldn't do that. But if you haven't listened to Glenn Beck's radio program, he is so far out ahead of everybody else in terms of putting a great talk radio program together. We've learned a lot from Glenn Beck just by listening to him.
I don't know. Dennis Miller is catching him.
Well, Dennis Miller has got something that practically nobody else has. But I thought that going to television would ruin Glenn Beck. He did really good in this debate, and I like the way he ends it. Raise the bar. Don't lower it. Did you hear what she said, Jeff? When Diane Sawyer asked an extremely astute question, is there any line, would you draw the line anywhere at any age to give out birth control to kids, given the fact that the puberty age for girls is going down, 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 would you go to grade school and give out the birth control pill? And she said, she's an honest liberal. She said, I couldn't draw the line any place. It's amazing. Raise the bar, don't lower it. We ought to adopt that as a as kind of a model because it applies in so many different ways. You know, to preachers and churches, preachers raise the bar, don't lower it. Joel Osteen, raise the bar, don't lower it. I'll have to give that more thought. In the meantime, here's Millie from Arlington Heights. Hi, Millie.
Hi. I just wanted to raise another question on this birth control pills to young children. Has anybody asked the question, how much damage are they doing to the child, to their health? Because birth control pills are hormones.
And they are not designed for children.
That's right. That's right. And even young women taking them quite often have problems after a while. And I really question the free use in that manner for any other reason. That is a health question that I think they should look at. And I haven't heard anybody mention it.
Well, it's a great question. Thank you very much, Millie. Now, being no physician nor doctor, I can't answer the questions, although I'll save that. I'll file that away as a question when we get the chance to talk with Stephen Rudd or somebody like that from the Christian Medical Association, see what he has to say. Although, if memory serves, it's one of the concerns that the Christian Medical and Dental Association has had about other forms of contraception, emergency contraception, is that these things are not, that the primary target of these things are young women and young girls, underage girls, and that the drug was never designed or tested with that particular target in mind, and no one knows what it could do. No one knows what it could do and what long-term effects it could have. It's a great question. Thank you very much, Millie, and thanks for listening up there near Chicago. For the remainder of today's program, we're going to go back. They used to say way back. We're going to go back to the first and the second century to remember Ignatius of Antioch. He's a bishop, a martyr, a pastor. Joining us to remember Ignatius of Antioch on this day, as the church does, Pastor Randy Asbury, pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in St. Louis and author of an article on St. Ignatius for the blog Raspberries Res. He's going to have to explain that. All these blogs have such strange names. Pastor Asbury, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's good to be back with you.
What is your favorite Ignatius of Antioch quote?
Oh, boy, you're asking me to choose a favorite? There's so many good ones.
Yeah.
Let's go with this one. I take no pleasure in corruptible food or the pleasures of this life. I want the bread of God, which is the flesh of Christ, who is of the seed of David. And for drink, I want his blood, which is incorruptible love. How's that one?
It's very interesting. You know, there are a lot of people who would look back at the first and the second century church and say, you know, this was kind of the free form, anything goes church, moved along by the Spirit, and these ideas about the Lord's Supper being Christ's body and blood didn't come along until the medieval Roman Catholic Church. How would you respond?
Well, that's obviously not true, even just from Scripture. I mean, St. Paul talks about the Lord's Supper in 1 Corinthians. It's a fellowship, a joining in the body and blood of Christ. So the early church fathers pick up on that, and they say, we want the blood of Christ, we want the body of Christ.
How close was Ignatius of Antioch to the apostolic era and to the apostolic persons themselves?
Well, if we can put it in our terms, you might say he went to seminary under Professor St. John the Apostle.
Wow.
He was Polycarp were kind of disciples of John the Apostle. One source said Ignatius was born about 35. Another source says about 50. So, you know, right after Jesus' ministry and death and resurrection and ascension, but definitely the next generation of Christians.
So he would have been born during the apostolic era proper.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So where does he fall in the line, Antioch being obviously a significant Christian center in those centuries? Where does he fall in the line? Is he an immediate successor to one of the apostles or to one of the apostles' successors?
Well, if you take Peter as what they might say, the first bishop of Antioch, Ignatius seems to be the third one. So there's Peter, and then there's another one, and then there's Ignatius.
What is he best known for?
Well, probably for, one, his martyrdom. He was martyred in about the year 117, 118, somewhere in there. But probably a very close second or tie would be his seven letters that he wrote to churches while he was on the way to Rome to be martyred.
Could I'm trying to put my chronologies together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about a man who very well could have read with his own eyes the autograph letters of St. Paul?
Could very well have, yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, he was definitely in that area, Antioch in Syria, which is north of the Holy Land, and he could very well have read them. He might have even talked to St. Paul, St. Peter. We are pretty sure he would have talked to St. John, you know, sat at his feet and learned. So, yeah, good possibility, I would say.
Who did he write to, and what is the gist of Ignatius of Antioch's message to those early Christians?
Well, we're pretty certain he wrote seven letters. They are pretty much beyond dispute that he wrote these seven to churches in what's now modern-day Turkey or Asia Minor at the time. He wrote them to the church at Philadelphia, the church at Sardis, and the church at Smyrna, and the church at Ephesus. We recognize those names from Scripture. And then he also wrote a couple of letters, one to Magnesia and Tralles. Those are cities in the same area as those other cities we're familiar with. And then also a letter to the Christians at Rome. Basically, he was telling them, please don't try to hold up my martyrdom, my execution when I get there. And he also wrote a letter to Polycarp himself.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What does he have to say to Polycarp, this other great of the same era?
Basically, he talks to Polycarp and says, I'm going off to be martyred. You know, I encourage you to keep up the good work as bishop, as pastor, and please watch out for the Christians in your charge and also for those in my charge.
And isn't it true that Polycarp becomes one of the most famous martyrs?
Yes.
Not too long after that?
Yep, he himself becomes a martyr, too. Mm-hmm.
So what's the... He overlaps to the apostolic era, but he obviously dies during an era of pretty intense persecution. What's Christianity like in the days of Ignatius of Antioch?
Well, just kind of reading between the lines in his letter, the idea that he's that the church is starting to get somewhat organized. He talks a lot in his letters about the bishop and the presbyters and the deacons, so they definitely have some kind of order to the church. He's also talking a lot about be united with the bishop, with the presbyters, and with each other. He talks about living in harmony as Christians. And also he is encouraging the Christians to partake frequently of the Lord's Supper. Gather together, he calls them many times, to gather together frequently to hear the gospel, basically, and to feast at the Lord's table, we would say.
So what kind of a picture emerges of the church, how would you describe it in broad terms, that Ignatius writes to and about?
Well, he's writing to a church that is undergoing persecution, and so you have many people who are starting to question, is this worth it? And so he's trying to build them up in that way. He's also trying to encourage the bishops or, and the pastors, the clergy, to keep tending the flock. So there's definitely some organization going on, but also they're getting afraid during this time of persecution. They're starting to fear, and he wants to prevent them from falling away from the faith. So the Christian church is starting to grow, starting to build itself and get organized, you might say. And they're starting to rely on each other, too. You know, he wants the Christians in Asia Minor to work together, rely on each other, support each other during this time of persecution.
So what should we conclude when we hear Ignatius writing again and again, putting this emphasis in this very scriptural and high view of the Lord's Supper for the Christians that were under his care and the Christians to whom he wrote? What should we conclude about both his and the early Christians' place for the Lord's Supper, especially during a time of persecution?
It's absolutely essential, I would say. When they would come together to hear the teaching of Jesus and to receive the body and blood of Christ, he wants to say, basically, it's so important for you to gather together, and that way you can actually fend off the powers of Satan. You can be joined together as one. And so it's very important. It's the chief thing.
Here's another quote. It's a bit lengthy, so bear with me. But I want you to, if you would, interpret simply what Ignatius of Antioch is saying. He's writing to the Trallians, I believe. He says, "Be deaf, therefore, whenever anyone speaks to you apart from Jesus Christ, who was of the family of David, who was the son of Mary, who was born, who ate and drank, who really was persecuted under Pontius Pilate, who really was crucified and died, while those in heaven and on earth and under the earth looked on, and who, moreover, really was raised from the dead when his father raised him up. His father, that is, in the same way, will likewise also raise us up in Christ Jesus, who believe in him, apart from whom we have no true life." What's Ignatius saying here?
I think he's saying a couple of things. He's saying you want to listen for Jesus Christ. In the preaching of the church, listen for him. If you don't hear him being proclaimed, be deaf. Tune your ears out. I think he's also going on to say there, notice this wonderful detail he gives, the family of David, son of Mary. He was really born. He both ate and drank. He's saying he was really a man. The Son of God was truly a man. So not only is he fighting against the persecution, he's also fighting against some false teaching around at the time that said, Jesus only seemed to be human. So he's saying, no, he was really human, really ate and drank, really was crucified, really died, and really rose.
It almost sounds like the Creed, Pastor Asbury.
Yes, it does. I think we can probably see some beginning stages of a creed, these details in Christ's life and ministry, his death and resurrection. Yeah.
Those who, on the other side, I talked before about Christians who have this kind of romantic view of a pristine church that really had no set structure and really had no set teachings. On the other side, of course, are those more liberal Bible scholars of today and the past who try to paint a picture of this time as though there were all sorts of competing versions, equally valid competing versions of Christianity that would have denied things like Jesus' true divinity or his death or his resurrection or why he died and rose again for us. How does Ignatius help us today in the 21st century against that kind of nonsense?
He basically says there's only one truth you need to worry about, and that's Jesus Christ and him crucified. There's only one gathering you need to worry about, and that's the church, gathering around the good news of Jesus and around his body and blood. That's what you want to focus on. So I think it's pretty clear that there's this one way. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life.
He refers to Christ Jesus as the one apart from whom we have no true life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is in those words?
We have no life with God without Jesus Christ. Over and over again, he talks about Jesus as the life. Well, he's talking about the life with God. In fact, from another quote, this one to the Ephesians, he's talking about being perfect unity in order that you may always have a share in God. So that comes out very much in his writings. You have life with God.
You said something at the beginning about him possibly being schooled by John the Apostle, and it's hard not to notice an affinity with Jesus' words as recorded by John, where he says, "Unless you eat of my blood, eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, you have no life in you."
Right.
Is that being reflected by Ignatius here?
I think so. Yeah. The life is the salvation, the forgiveness God gives, that communion with him in the body and blood of Christ in the Holy Supper. Yeah.
What do we know about his, you've mentioned his, I hear your beagles in the background, by the way.
Yes.
And by the way, when we talk about Pastor Asbury's blog, you might see some pictures of his beagles performing certain tricks of levitation.
That's right, floating off the ground.
They seem to either be stuck to the floor or levitating off the ground, but I'll leave that to those who find your blog. What do we know about the particulars of his persecution, why and how he was finally martyred?
Well, I think it's safe to say he was martyred for confessing Christ. He was a bishop in Antioch. And evidently he was taken from Antioch to Rome. Some people dispute, why would he be taken to Rome and not just executed right there in Antioch? We really don't know. all of the circumstances, but according to his letters and according to the church historian Eusebius, he took this rather lengthy journey to Rome, and he was treated very badly even by the guards. He calls them lions, these guards, and he says, even when I'm nice to them, they still abuse me. But then he ended up going to Rome, and as some early church tradition has it, he was thrown to the beasts in the Colosseum there.
And finally, why does the 21st century church continue to remember a bishop, a martyr, a Christian like Ignatius of Antioch? About a minute to respond.
Okay, well, first we thank God for faithful saints such as Antioch who can, or I mean Ignatius, who can confess the true gospel and bear witness to Christ. Secondly, I'd say we see how God deals with him in his mercy and how God raised up this man, Ignatius, to confess the faith even in the midst of persecution. And he calls his chains string of pearls. Wow. He gives us a good picture of how God's mercy had changed him. And Ignatius then becomes our example. You know, we can follow his example in being steadfast in the faith and confessing Christ even in the midst of hardship.
Pastor Randy Asbury is pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in St. Louis, author of an article on St. Ignatius, made up largely of quotes from Ignatius himself.
Right.
For his blog, Raspberries Res. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
By the way, you can find his blog, along with those quotes from St. Ignatius. You can also see the pictures of those beagles floating off the ground and stuck to the ground, respectively. It's Raspberries Res. Now, you need to remember, it's not raspberry as in the raspberry, but Raspberry, B-U-R-R-Y, Raspberries Res. .blogspot.com. I recommend you go there tonight and read what you can. Good stuff there. Raspberriesres.blogspot.com. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about Moses and the burning bush. What more can be said about Moses standing there reluctantly before God as he appears, and they call it a theophany, an appearance of the divine being in a burning bush, speaks to him and calls him to go down to Egypt and say to Pharaoh, let my people go. Has it all been said in the movies? Or is there more to be said? We'll find out tomorrow as we talk with Deaconess Pam Nielsen, part of our ongoing conversation with her on teaching a Sunday school lesson. Also tomorrow, Pastor Eric Rotman of Good News Magazine is going to join us on the Office of the Keys. That is where Christ says in the Gospels, not in one place but in several, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. He's talking about the forgiveness of sins. We'll talk about that tomorrow with Pastor Eric Rotman. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.